Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. It's Wednesday, and we always get a chance to talk with interesting people on Wednesdays and good topics. This Wednesday, no exception. Our good friend Scott Wieman will be here second hour. You probably know or remember Scott as a person who has devoted his life to helping Catholics and others with a holistic approach to overcoming addiction. So we'll do that in the second hour. If you have questions about your own addictions or addictions of people in the family, about how the sacraments can be a part of healing, about how the sacraments can work hand in hand with all kinds of other therapies to help those who are experiencing addictions. Second hour is for you. This hour, will we talk about mercy? We have the man who wrote the book on mercy. As a matter of fact, the book is called Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know. The author is Father Daniel Maloney. He's a priest of the Archdiocese of Boston, the former Catholic chaplain at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And before his ordination in 2010, he earned a doctorate in philosophy from Notre Dame University. You probably heard of that little university in the Midwest there. He's worked at think tanks in Princeton, Washington, D.C., New York, served as the associate editor of First Things, and now is with the Augustine Institute. That is quite a resume, Father. Father Daniel Maloney, thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, given that resume, what about the quality of mercy is the thing that you said, that's what I'm going to write my book about?
All that stuff kind of ties into the book. It was, the book was probably 15 years or more in the making. I started writing when I was in graduate school at Notre Dame. Trying to write an article about God's how the very question that I end up wrestling with in the first chapters of the book, how could it be that God's justice and God's mercy are opposites, which is the way most of us think about them, if they both are gods?
Oh yeah,
that would mean right. Like,
yes.
I mean, just it's not sort of an obvious sort of point, but most people kind of miss it. So I got interested in the topic of mercy, you realize that they can't be opposites. That mercy can't be that like justice is strictness and mercy is leniency or something like that.
Right.
Because if God is perfectly just and God is perfectly merciful and they're opposites, that means that whenever God is just, he's merciless. And whenever God is merciful, he's being unjust. And that doesn't make any sense at all because God's – or that – or maybe, you know, like on Tuesdays, God's just and Wednesdays, he's merciful or something, right? God's the same eternally,
right,
perfectly, everything he is. So that meant that those concepts, were, as most people use them, were not right. And so that got me interested in kind of the some of the deep philosophical and theological ideas. And then when I became a priest, of course, I was applying them in the sacrament of confession, which gave me this whole other – understanding of the notion of mercy.
So let's get into that then, because I'll tell you what, the general kind of pop culture view would be, well, you kind of have the Old Testament God, he's a God of justice. You got the New Testament God, he's a God of mercy. I know that you don't agree with that because I can read a book. But how then do we make an accord that the oneness of God, but he is totally and absolutely a God of justice and completely and totally a God of mercy. How do we make those two things fit together?
Well, part of it is how you define those ideas. Not just language, but it's actually what does it mean for God to be just is what is God? So the basic solution that I came with after all these years of wrestling was that justice is the word, and this even goes back to its etymology in Latin and Greek and German and things like that. Justice just means what's right. And it's big when you zoom back from – it's not environmental justice. It's not racial justice. It's not distributive justice or social justice. Justice as a whole big concept means our idea of what's right. And then mercy is the virtue that kicks in when things aren't right. It's the right. So you have right, an idea of what's the right way thing the world ought to be or creation ought to be. And then when something's wrong, then we don't just sort of say, huh, it's wrong. Mercy is, well, how do we right the wrong? How do we make, therefore, we know what the right, the way the world ought to be in its rightness. It's not right. How do we make it more right? So mercy then is not simply saying we're going to give up on justice. It's instead saying we're going to restore to justice, to rightness, things that are wrong. So therefore, mercy is always pointing at justice.
You can see how this addresses some of the concern that that a perfect justice is one that none of us could tolerate. But it also addresses the concern of the person who's tired of mercy in the sense of this. All this mercy, like for example, just if you look at our world today and the tremendous disorder in our world today. Well, sometimes I think the person would say that too much mercy is actually the enemy of order because it makes people feel at liberty to do horrible things if they know that there's just this endless mercy available to them. This kind of connecting justice and mercy addresses that concern, that there's not too much mercy. That would be like saying there's too much setting the world right.
Exactly. It's impossible for that to be the case. The one of the mistakes people make is to associate mercy with leniency, mm-hmm. Or mercy with being lax about things, about order. And that just, yeah, that's a recipe for disorder. I have a little piece in my book about a fictional monastery where Brother Tardy is always late for Vespers or something like that. And the abbot doesn't discipline him. Just says, I'm going to be merciful and let merciful in quotes, right? And let Brother Tardy always be late. Well, then the other monks are waiting for him and they might think to themselves, well, I can wait 5 minutes to finish my thing rather than rush off to the chapel because Brother Tardy's going to hold us late anyway. And then two guys are late 5 minutes and three guys are late. And then suddenly no one's really there on time and people are kind of, well, can I just do my vespers, my prayers on my own? And all the order breaks down if you let one guy do that. Or think of a soccer team where you know, one guy just doesn't practice or something like
right.
that. You need to have it. So in little things like that, you sort of say, well, yeah, so we need to have some order. But on the other hand, that's just because we've defined mercy in the wrong way. If you say, no, I've got to make him right, part of what I have to do with Brother Tardy is just get him to show up on time. Like, right? Part of what you have to do with anyone who does a criminal, you want them to be a law-abiding citizen when they get out of jail. You want your child to learn how to control his emotions rather than just give in to them or learn how to be respectful for people or make his bed or whatever. These are all just little ways in which that what you're doing there is saying I'm trying to discipline someone to make them better. And you can see how this is part of the letter to the Hebrews, how God in the Old Testament disciplines us to make us holier. And that discipline sometimes is painful, as it often was for the Jewish people. It's often is for us too. We sort of have to cut away those parts of our bad habits, those parts of our ways of managing with the world that kind of get in the way of our holiness, our coping mechanisms. Sometimes you have to break us down and rebuild us spiritually in order to be a saint. But that's all. That's mercy. So mercy sometimes feels like it's pretty hard stuff. So we have to give up things that are very important to us, like our pride.
But the mercy is the aspect of mercy, the sense that God's perspective, I'm not going to leave you in a state of disorder. I'm not going to leave you in a state of injustice. Mercy involves bringing everyone out of disorder and injustice.
Correct. I mean, that's the whole, if you want to look at the story of the Bible, is everything was just as God wanted it to be. Then original sin and the fall happened. And then God is scrambling to right the wrong of that first sin. So everything that he's doing, everything in the Old Testament, the whole story is that he's trying to limit the damage, mm-hmm. Cultivate this one small group of people, the people of Israel, get them bigger, then sort of find the remnant that's faithful and cut away everyone else. And then find that, then later as they grow, the faithful grow again. Find within them, cut away those who have made mistakes and bring them close. So he's gradually getting thinner and thinner. This is the great moment of the Babylonian captivity of the Old Testament, when the Babylonians captured all the Jews. That was a time of great purification of Israel. When they went back, they were going to follow the Bible, because if they didn't, you know, they knew what God would punish them. But that taught them to be more zealous for the law. And then, of course, that plays out in the Pharisees, who are so zealous for the law, they're kind of jerks. And then Jesus goes deeper and deeper and deeper to teach them. It's not just about getting things right. You know, you can't just the scribes who don't lift a finger to help people become just are making the mistake of being justice. That's justice only, not without having a concept of mercy. But everything God's doing is reaching down to lift us up. A phrase I use is, restorative solidarity is a way to describe God's mercy. He has solidarity with us. That's, in fact, one of the core meanings of the word chesed, which is the word for mercy in the Old Testament, is that God is faithful. He has solidarity with us even when we are not faithful to him. But it's not just a sort of, hey, well, but I love you just the way you are. It's I love you, but I also want to lift you up to where you ought to be. And so it's got this element of solidarity in it. It's got an element of direction. I'm restoring you to where you ought to be. I'm righting the wrong that is your soul. And it also has this notion that it exposes God's omnipotence, right? Because the one difference between mercy and something like, say, just pity is that mercy, you kind of make a difference. You know, think of the works of mercy. If I'm going to clothe the naked, I need to have clothes to give them. If I'm going to give alms to somebody, I need to have money. I need to have the power to make a difference. I'm going to instruct the ignorant. I have to have knowledge. Well, the totality of God's mercy shows he's able to perfect every imperfection. And so the mercy is one way of revealing God's awesome power, because he's not just able to sort of say, oh, it's too bad. I have solidarity with you, but I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Right. That's part of the, and it teaches us we can trust God to make things better. And that's part of, in fact, that's one of the great slogans of mercy, right? Is St. Faustina's connecting of divine mercy and this notion that Jesus, I should trust in you.
Our number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Our guest is Father Daniel Maloney. His book is called Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know. If you have a question about any aspect of mercy, this hour is for you, 888-318-7884. Maybe you are lacking that experience of mercy in your life. I'd like some guidance to help to find that. You're welcome to call. Maybe you're concerned about confession and finding mercy in confession. You'd like more information on that, or you just a better understanding of what happens there. 888-318-7884. I want to ask Father Maloney when we come back about the relationship between mercy and the truth. Is it merciful sometimes to just let people to live without the truth or go without the truth? Better to just allow them to have the peace of not knowing rather than disturbing them with the truth. We'll find out if that's really merciful when we come back. Again, the number 888-318-7884. As I said, our guest is Father Daniel Maloney, and you are welcome to call. Before we go to the break, that 20 Answers flash sale is, they extended it through this whole week, so you can get any one of our 20 Answers books for just $1 at shop.catholic.com. Any one, or you can get them all. You can get each one for just $1 right now at shop.catholic.com. 20 Answers, Angels and Demons, Death and Judgment, Divorce and Remarriage, Mary, God, Salvation, the Eucharist. I'm just going to keep reading the list, Nick. You go to break whenever you want. 20 Answers, the Papacy, Scripture. A few minutes each week with our podcast, Catholic Answers Focus, will help you understand and defend your Catholic faith like a boss. Get it wherever you get your podcasts or listen anytime at CatholicAnswersFocus.com. We Catholics just celebrated the Assumption and Coronation of Mary, so we asked Father Hugh about these important feasts, and he ended up telling us some really cool things about Mary going to heaven and being crowned queen. Also this week, the Catholic Church teaches that our justification, which can also be called getting right with God, is not a one-time thing but a process. But the letter to the Romans seems to imply that our justification might just be a one-time event. Carlo Broussard explains the truth about what St. Paul taught and why the Catholic Church gets this one right. Catholic Answers Focus is free, brand new twice a week, and now available on YouTube.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
Now, not only can you watch EWTN anywhere, but anytime with EWTN On Demand. Get on-demand access to more than 12,000 EWTN programs, including live shows and specials, all in one place, all free. Just go to EWTN.com/on-demand. There's nothing to fill out, no memberships required, and no fees to pay. All you need is an internet connection, and you're good to go. EWTN On Demand. Fast, easy, and free.
Answers Faith and Reason, 20 Answers Catholic Social Teaching, 20 Answers Faith and Works, and 20 Answers New Age. That's the entire list. You can get them all for a buck right now at shop.catholic.com. Our guest this hour is a PhD in philosophy, a priest of the Catholic Church, and now a member of the staff at the Augustine Institute. He has a brand new book from Ignatius Press out just this year in time for the Feast of the Divine Mercy. The book is called, Father Daniel Maloney. The book is called Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know. And if there's something you'd like to know about mercy, whether you're Catholic or not, you can call 888-318-7884. As a matter of fact, non-believers are sometimes our best interlocutors on the topic of mercy because they love to challenge us on the God of justice and the God of mercy. So if you're not a believer and you'd like to get a sense from someone who is quite capable of answering your questions about what Catholics really and truly believe about the mercy of God and about the justice of God, 888-318-7884 is the number. So I suppose there's a certain sense in which we are considered vicious and mean in the culture today, we Catholics, because we insist on things like, well, marriage has a definition, and there are two sexes, and God made these two sexes. And we don't obfuscate those things. We insist upon them. And we don't just insist upon them for ourselves, but we insist everyone should hold these things, these basic truths about what it is to be a human being, and it's unhealthy for those who don't. So is that a failure of mercy on our part to insist on the truth of things like marriage you almost can't believe it that you have to defend the fact that humans are just two sexes, but you do in fact have to defend that now. Is that a lack of mercy on our part, Father?
Well, no, if that were the case, that would imply that the way God made things somehow lacked mercy, which is, again, the problem that you talked about at the beginning, that mercy and justice are not opposites. And since God is truth, God is as well as justice, that you wouldn't say that truth and justice are opposed to each other. So if you go back to that deep theology, that what is God, he is both true and he is just and he is mercy. And so they would all have to kind of work together. And the way they work together is that we in the Catholic Church are trying to not do what the Pharisees did, what Jesus accused the Pharisees of doing, which was to say, here's the way things ought to be, and then too bad for you if you're wrong, right? This is part of when we defend the truth, what we're doing is saying, here's the way things ought to be. And sometimes that's really ambitious for people. Like, we want you to, Jesus says to be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect, right? That's, all of us are falling short of that. So the church is, different from the secular culture in that when we say, here's the way things ought to be, we also say, and if they're not that way, we have a whole bunch of responses to it. Right? We're not just going to lay out, here's justice, here's truth, too bad for you if you fall short. Like, the whole point of the Christian faith, which starts from the point that, no, Jesus died on the cross in order to right wrongs.
Yes.
So if you're wrong, if you're a sinner, we have the answer. Come to confession, get baptized. The point of charity is that you both say, I'm calling you to perfection because you can be so much more than you are. And then let me show you how. Right. The secular culture, like the cancel culture, says, I call in my book, I have a chapter called Justice Only Politics, where these people have these rich ideas of what how race relations ought to be or how gender relations ought to be or something like that. And if you deviate from that one iota, they come down on you with a ton of bricks. They cancel you. You get spammed in your email. They tell everyone your social security number and go steal their ID. Right? It's this crazy reaction, as if they have not thought through, one, what it'd be like to live under that regime if it were universalized. And two, they just haven't thought through mercy, what to do when things go wrong. So they have this rich notion of justice, or at least some of them do. And then in the classic way of talking about things, that's how you describe a tyrant, who's going to be cruel in his pursuit of the truth and pursuit of justice.
Yeah.
So when people accuse Catholics of being, cruel or being merciless, what they're assuming we don't actually, when they're saying we're jerks, for talking about the truth and holding up high standards, because they don't realize that we both have justice and mercy. We're doing both things and not just condemning.
Lots of folks on the line for you, Father. Shall we go to the calls?
That sounds great.
All right. Let's start with Arthur in Lubbock, Texas, listening on Our Lady of Victory Radio. Arthur, your question for Father Daniel Maloney.
I was just wondering what sort of guidelines priests have on giving penance relating to mercy. I've had occasions where I had gone many, many years without going and got a fairly light penance, and other times when I sure didn't. What are the guidelines?
Well, there's kind of two schools about how to do that, right? And you might have gotten one from each. So there's the classic idea, and this was something that the curé of Ars, St. John Vianney, used to do, which was that he would complete himself a heavy penance. So if it's been 20 years since you've been to confession, and you have a whole lot of stuff you got to bring to confession. Well, if you were then to come say, and by the way, I need you to basically fast for the next 20 years to make up for it, right? That would be the equal and opposite sort of response to the sins that you've committed or something like that. It could crush you if you're just starting to come back to the faith. But in solidarity, he and perhaps other people, the priest might say, here's a light penance for you, but I'm going to fast, or I'm going to mortify myself, or I'm going to pray, or I'm going to do because the whole church isn't, because it's just Jesus basically who's the one who's forgiving your sins. The whole church can participate in your penance in some way. So that might be part of what's going. If you went to a solid priest who's thinking this way, he might give you a light penance in order to not discourage you from coming to confession the next time, but himself do the penance. Another school is to kind of look at it with a different focus, which is what's good for you? What do you need right now? Since in some level, every little sin is an infinite offense to God, there's nothing you could actually do on your own that would make you square with God, right? That's why we needed Jesus to die for us. And so the death of Christ, the sacrifice of Christ, is so superabundant that the real question when looking at a penance is what's the right medicine for your soul at this moment. So it might be that now that you're a little bit stronger and you've gone to confession 3 weeks in a row, what you did to your wife requires me to sign a heavy penance for you, and that would be the best thing for you, even if it's not. So there's two ways. One is to make the penance proportionate to the sins in some very loose sense, or the other way is to think of the penance as medicine or a spiritual exercise to make you spiritually stronger. So those would be you might have two priests from two kind of two different modes, or sometimes I'll be really light with a guy who's been away for 20 years and really lay it on thick. It's like you need to spend 25 minutes in prayer to think about what you did or something like that for someone for whom that's the right, seems to me to be the right response.
That makes sense to you, Arthur?
Fabulous. I never knew that anyone else participated in the penance besides the confessioner.
That's how Lent began, actually. Lent began with the whole parish participating in the penance of the people who were preparing for their confession. That's an ancient idea in the church.
I feel really good about that. Nick, next time I go to confession, I'm going to ask for something for you to do for me. Does that seem fair? Arthur, thanks very much for the call. We're talking mercy with the man who wrote the book on mercy. Literally wrote the book on mercy. It's called Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know. It's new this year from the Augustine Institute and Ignatius Press. You can get it wherever you get your Catholic books. If they don't have it at your bookstore, they'll get it for you. It'll be there in a few days. Daniel Maloney is the priest author of this book. It's interesting to me that we've gone so long and we have hardly talked about the kind of who you called the prophet. Yes, you called her a prophet, Sister Faustina. So maybe I'll go back to calls. But I want to ask you about Sister Faustina a little bit when we come back, okay, Father?
Okay.
Father Daniel Maloney, our guest, our number, if you want to talk about mercy, maybe you're against mercy. If you are, you're welcome to call. We'll have that conversation. 888-318-7884.
Who or what is God? Does the universe provide clues to God's existence? Why would a loving, all-powerful God permit suffering in the world? In 20 Answers God, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, all while it guides you down a path of rational inquiry and understanding towards an encounter with the central mystery of the universe. 20 Answers God is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. It's free, and you'll have instant access to our daily broadcast, the schedule of upcoming shows, and you'll even be able to search the archive and listen to thousands of past shows. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the Church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Dr. David Anders here. Where is purgatory in the Bible? Why confess my sins to a priest?
Find out more tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on Call to Communion.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
The book is called Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know. I don't know why mercy is one of those words that seems like it should have the opposite effect, but it's somewhat divisive as a word. Some people have a reaction of kind of cringing at it. Others maybe putting it in juxtaposition to everything else about our faith. So a healthy view of mercy is essential to living the Christian faith, and you can get that from this book, the brand new book, Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know by Father Daniel Maloney, available now from Ignatius Press and the Augustine Institute. If you want to talk with Father Maloney, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I want to tell you a little story about something that happened here in San Diego years ago, maybe 15 years ago. This woman paid out of her own money. She loved Sister Faustina. She bought a billboard and she put it up down in the beach community where there's a lot of loose behavior and drug use and all that. Down. And it's a picture of Jesus and the rays coming out of his heart, you know, so it's the Divine Mercy picture. Mm-hmm. And all she put on the billboard was the words, come to my mercy. And the reaction, I thought the reaction in that community was going to be so negative, but it was so positive. People writing letters to the newspaper saying, this is the kind of thing that Christians should be saying. This is how they should be. I'm not a Christian, but this is the kind of thing that makes me like Jesus and all. And I was just astounded by that. But there is something about the message of the mercy that people know they need. They know they need mercy.
I think that's right. And this, I mean, that's part of the reason why everybody. If you told someone that there's a guy who's going to sit and listen to you for as long as you want to talk about all the bad things you've done and at the end forgive you on behalf of justice itself, right? People will be lining up to go to confession in huge numbers. Instead, so the whole idea that that we're embracing you and saying that, yeah, no matter what you've done, people today feel so awful about themselves. I mean, you know, not just they're lonely. Suicides are going through, are increasing, and there's just so many people who, and again, I think it's part of the problem of our era, is that as we become more secularized, we also lose this language of mercy, the idea of mercy, the practice of mercy. It's a hard thing to actually be merciful to somebody. It's a hard thing to forgive, and it's a lot easier just to sort of say, hey, you know, I'm going to just cancel you. I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to excommunicate you, or anathematize. Those are religious words, but they do that in a secular sense.
Yeah.
To heck with you. I'm going to leave you alone. I'm going to do my own thing. And so people can feel so awful about themselves when they start to think about all the great things. And that's part of – you were mentioning St. Faustina. That's part of one of the questions that we have. So in the book, I talk about this discussion about private revelation, right? So the stories that St. Faustina, along with other visionaries, their visions have been approved by the church in certain ways, right? Pope John Paul II canonized St. Faustina as the first saint of the new millennium. And he adopted the vision that she had that we ought to have a octave of divine mercy a novena of divine mercy that ends in the Divine Mercy Sunday. And the church is kind of that's a big promotion of this idea of one saint, in the same way that the church has devotion to the Sacred Heart and a feast of the Sacred Heart based upon the vision of St. Margaret Mary Alacoque. And so one of the theological questions is, what do we make of these private visions, right? It's one of the things that drives Protestants crazy. The Bible is the Bible, and then you have these nuns who say stuff, and the church just adds it to their calendar. And so Pope Benedict, when he was commented on this, he said that the way to understand these visionaries and these visions is as a kind of modern-day prophecy. The language of private revelation versus public revelation can be confusing because it makes it sound like, again, like the criticism that what St. Faustina saw in her prayer was equal to St. Paul, equal to the Bible. So he says, don't call it that, but call it prophecy. And think of it as God inspiring these people to say something that's important for our time. And he had the rules for it. It has to be consistent with the it has to be consistent with faith and morals. It's consistent with the doctrine of the church. It's something that's prudent or good for the faithful to know about. Like, if God gives the message to St. Faustina to talk about mercy, he gives the message to St. Margaret Mary Alacoque to talk about Jesus's loving Sacred Heart. The message to the children at Fatima to say, let us pray the prayer for those who are most in need of God's mercy. These are all ways in which there's been this kind of constant drumbeat that we need to be. These prophets have been told by God to talk about mercy and teach us practical devotions about mercy. Why does God want to do that? Why is God putting that idea in front of the church? And partly it's because prophets are usually a little bit ahead of their time. But I think St. Faustina was during the 30s in Poland, like the Nazis were coming. You just finished World War I. Totalitarianism is justice without mercy. The Marxists are justice without mercy, right? In the same way that the children of Fatima were preparing us for Bolshevism, for the coming of the Soviet Union and all of that totalitarian communism, It was, here's the way, we have this great vision for how we be. We don't need to work. We're all going to just contribute, you know, teach according to his ability and from each according to their need. And like, it's this great, I got that backwards, but it's a great vision for how things ought to be. And if you're, we'll throw you in the gulag if you're wrong. That was the 20th century, right? And in some sense, that's our culture today. And so why does God send prophets? It's for our need. And there's probably nothing more that we need. I mean, there's probably, you know, but we certainly need mercy. And that constant message of mercy is just something we proclaim regularly every day in order to correct for the big mistakes we make in our culture, in our secular culture.
It does suggest that the Christian, even in the political sphere, then can't be just for things that are good, but behaving in the way that the opponent behaves. You can't. You because as you said, like, this attitude today is something like, we're a culture that believes in tolerance and acceptance of everyone, and if you don't go along with that, you're out. It's a right. To kind of paraphrase what you just said about Bolshevism. So we cannot be just we're pro-life though, and we're pro-family, but we're going to cancel you. We can't. That's profoundly un-Christian.
There's a real temptation to do that. And you have, I mean, the first reading today from St. Paul says, shun those who will not work. We do have excommunication in the church. That's not separate yourself from people who are a danger to you spiritually is a good thing to do sometimes. So some people, they'll take that and they say, they break from the way that God is, right? God tells the Jews to separate from the pagans. Don't hang out with the Egyptians. Don't intermarry at the beginning, because he's trying to separate them from evil. And that's a spiritual temptation of them. But God was never going to didn't cancel the pagans. He wanted to save the Gentiles, as we call them in the New Testament, he wanted to save them also. He sends St. Paul to the Greeks. So even though someone does something wrong, and you might, for your own good or for the good of your family, have to separate from them, you don't, in your heart, you still have to have solidarity with them so you can bring them back. And that's part of the difference between the secular is, we're cutting you off, we're throwing you in the gulag, we're executing you, we're canceling you. The Christian says, we might have to separate from you because you're a danger to us, whether physical or spiritual. But at the end of the day, what we want is for you to go to heaven.
Yeah.
And so hopefully this is, you know, we'll separate from you so we'll be stronger so we can go out and pick you up on our shoulders and bring you back like the lost sheep. That's
Father Daniel Maloney, our guest. His book is Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know, 888-318-7884. It's one of the great virtues of the book is that the virtue of mercy is not separated out and made the opponent of the other virtues like truth and goodness and beauty and justice, shown to be kind of the cap to all of them, the one that gives all of them their meaning and their direction, a direction that involves reconciliation and wholeness and love and forgiveness and setting all things right. If you have questions about mercy, have questions about mercy in your own life, the life of a loved one, or in the life of the world, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We actually had a caller who had to go, Kim in Illinois, but she had two questions for you, Father, so I will give you her two questions. She wanted to know, how do I receive God's mercy? And she wanted to know, how can I teach that ability to others?
Well, to receive God's mercy isn't that hard until you realize the demands of mercy, right? I mean, to be baptized is to receive God's mercy. To pray and to receive grace is to receive God's mercy, because the fundamental problem, the fundamental wrong that has to be righted is our relationship with sin. But when we realize that God wants us to be even better than we are, no matter how good we are, he wants us to be better. To receive God's mercy, oftentimes we have to sort of examine our own consciences and examine our own hearts and examine how it is that we're the obstacle. The only way that we can cut ourselves off from God's mercy is by not asking for it. But very often, if we say, right, that's the unforgivable sin, is to not ask for forgiveness. And so to not ask for God's mercy means we won't get it. But we don't always want God's mercy if it requires God's discipline. If God's calling us to be perfect and we sort of say, well, I'm good enough, that's called lukewarmness. So part of what you have to do in order to really accept God's mercy is to really accept God's transforming grace, which means he has to get deep into your soul and he has to sort of, you know, shine the light on the dark corners where you've swept all the stuff that you don't want him to look at. And, you know, turn up the magnification on your heart and sort of you go, oh, my goodness, look at how awful I am. It's one of the great dynamics of the saintliness, right, is that the saints, it's almost like they level up in a video game and suddenly the bullets are coming faster. They suddenly realize, you know, I thought I was good and then suddenly I had the spiritual breakthrough and I realized I got a lot more work to do. And no matter how holy they are, they still realize they have, you know, one saint I remember said he wanted to have on his tombstone just the word sinner. He's a canonized saint in the Catholic Church, but he thought, and he wasn't being falsely pious. He just realized how much more he could do and how far all short he was falling of what his potential was. So in one level, if you want God's mercy, you want to accept God's mercy, you got to do all that spiritual work to get out of his way and let his grace transform you. To teach that to others is one is to do it yourself. But then a second is to, I think that St. Faustina's, again, the Jesus, I trust in you. Encourage people over and over again to trust in God, to put aside their own desires to control their future, and instead hand themselves over to God. Remember, the original sin was grasping, controlling, you know, God, if you can eat this fruit, you will be like gods. Mm. And so and that's what Jesus says, or St. Paul says in Philippians, is that Jesus did not grasp equality with God, but he instead humbled himself. So to teach people to trust in God is to humble yourself and say, you died for me on the cross. So therefore it's clear you got my back. And so you got my back in this thing, even though I don't see how, and this thing, even though I don't see how. And that is to accept God's mercy. To teach people God's mercy is to teach them that now they can learn how to trust and give up control over to God.
888-318-7884, our number, 888-31-TRUTH. We're talking about mercy with Father Daniel Maloney. The book is called Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know. If there's something you'd like to know about mercy, your call welcome. 888-318-7884.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
He was a pope, a saint, and a doctor of the Church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
Pope St. Gregory I the Great is one of only four popes honored as the Great. Among his many achievements was sending missionaries across Northern Europe, especially St. Augustine of Canterbury, who brought Christ to the people of England. In a pun, Pope Gregory called the English people angels. He died in 604.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Father Daniel Maloney, our guest this hour. The book is called Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know. It's a good news book, and it will help you put mercy in perspective. And I hope that you will check it out. It's from the Augustine Institute and Ignatius Press. Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884 with your questions or comments for Father Maloney. Before I go back to Father Maloney, however, I am obliged to tell you this. We have a free MP3 for you at shop.catholic.com. It's called How to Talk to Protestants. It's about talking about the faith when you find yourself in a conversation with a Protestant person who might want to challenge some aspect of the Catholic faith, or you hear something said about the Catholic faith that, you know, is not quite right, but you want to know how might you breach that topic with the person. You'll find this talk very helpful. It's a free MP3, How to Talk to Protestants, available now at shop.catholic.com. Our guest, Father Daniel Maloney, we're talking about mercy. The number 888-318-7884. I think this year is a particularly good time for your book. It seems perfectly timed because we've become merciless. And I don't know if it's the anxiety that surrounds this, what's called the culture war, and just the sense that everyone feels like everything's at stake all the time, or this weird intensity that comes with social media outlets where you can have these conversations with people you never see and you never know, and you can accuse them of all kinds of things. All of our worst instincts seem to be catered to and to be flourishing this year. It just seems like a nasty year, and we need some conversation about mercy.
I think that's absolutely right. I wrote the book last summer, so we weren't thinking about all this sorts of stuff, except that there's always a part of our culture that's agitating for a kind of perfectionist idea of justice.
Yeah.
There's a phrase that's common on college campuses that started making a way at the broader culture called microaggression, which is basically socially awkward things regarding a particular topic. So if I accidentally make some comment that makes you feel bad because you're poor, or I ask you, say, what do you do for work? Oh, I'm between jobs. That's called a microaggression, and you've somehow done an injustice. And anyway, people are like, so there's little, I was noticing things like that were all over the place, and they all do have there's a history behind them, but I wasn't thinking about all this sort of stuff. And the book comes out, and bam, here we have everybody, the cancel culture is making the front page of the newspaper. And nobody is nobody has solidarity with each other. One of the the cancel culture is kind of an acid that's eating away at what keeps us together. And the more secular, I mean, this is a big difference between kind of secular ways of looking at the way things ought to be. I mean, politics, but also within your family and within society in general. The big difference between secular and non and Catholic is that the Catholics want to maintain solidarity and want everyone to come along with us to heaven. We're never just going to throw people overboard. It saddens me to keep looking to watch the news and watch how no one gets the benefit of the doubt. In some sense, I've started to think of like these videos that we take that are 25 seconds long I'm not talking about the ones about the police, but just, we've turned our phones into sort of sources of gossip.
Right.
Right. There's kind of a way in which you sort of, if I post something on Facebook that makes you look bad, it's not that different than, did you hear what so-and-so did? I'm just showing you what so-and-so did, but in a curated, edited, partial way that's none of my business to show. It seems like gossip to me. And that's one of those things that eats away at our solidarity, right? The way the gossip always does. St. James in his letter says that the tongue is one of the great instruments of the devil. And same way, I think some ways the cell phone is, Twitter is.
Exactly.
Structures of sin in some ways, right?
Right.
So that's, I think, yeah, it's a real, the more I watch the news, I don't watch the news that much because it depresses me. But when I do, I keep thinking they should read, I don't know if they should read my book, but but we need mercy. So more people who do read my book should be able to bring it.
They should read your message. Book. I think you were right. They should read the book.
Okay.
The book is Mercy, by the way, What Every Catholic Should Know. Our guest is Father Daniel Maloney. On the line, Vince in Toronto, Canada. Don't give him a book. Don't give him a book. Watching on YouTube Live. Vince in Toronto, your question for Father Maloney.
Hey, Father Malone. Big fan of the show, guys, by the way. I have a quick just explanation and then the question right away. So I know in the Bible that God when he was talking to the demons, how they wanted to go into the swine of the pigs. Like, I think he basically showed them mercy by doing that. Like, my basic question is, does the Father show mercy towards the demons and Lucifer in any way? And do they take advantage of that mercy so they continue to cause, like, negative things? Or how does that work?
That's a great question, and I think the answer is yes, he does. Not everyone believes me on this, so if you think about what are God's options with regard to the devil and other demons, to the fallen angels, he can't let them into heaven, for reasons what he can do is he can sort of punish them. Or he can annihilate them. Like, he can either contain them in hell, right, which is kind of like a jail, or he can simply snap his fingers, not his fingers, but he could just sort of decide to make them cease to exist, which would be sort of the cosmic equivalent of the death penalty. The fact that he doesn't do the worst thing he could do to them, but instead gives them some sort of existence and allows them to, even though they're punished, he doesn't say, I've canceled you so much that you no longer exist. You still exist, just that now you're in hell. There's a sense in which there's a theological precept, which is that it's always better to be than not to be. Yeah. So then God even then uses the demons in his plan. I like that J.R. Tolkien has his great sort of depiction of the way God uses the devil by imagining a song where one voice starts to go off on his own away from the conductor. And the skilled conductor, that's the devil who's going off in his own way, and the skilled conductor then changes the theme of the music to incorporate the discord into a greater harmony. And that's, of course, the way that that God uses the devil, is that even though, you know, the devil tempts Adam and Eve, the same way that the devil himself was tempted, and Adam and Eve fall, and that's not great. If they passed the test, it would have been better. But he then uses the punishment that the devil gives for his own purposes, and he uses the powers of hell against Jesus to lead to the crucifixion, to lead to our resurrection. And there's a sense in which he's incorporating everything, even evil, into a greater good. He decides to use that somehow. So Jesus, when he directs the demons into the pigs, rather than, again, deciding to annihilate them, is in some sense, not doing the worst he could to them. So that's you can't really rehabilitate demons. They're in hell. They're gone. But they're still your creatures if you're God, and so you don't completely want to get rid of them. They still are. They're the black sheep in the family, if you will, right? So there's a certain kind of solidarity still by keeping them alive and treating them with something less than the full force of annihilation, which I think is the worst thing you can do. At least that's my theological opinion.
So, but for us, though, does God sometimes, there's a way in which his mercy can be harsh, in that sometimes he allows us to suffer things. And that's not like the suffering of the demons. It's a different kind of thing. It's corrective suffering.
Right. Well, there's two kinds of suffering that he does. First, he has to incapacitate us from doing more evil than, he has to control the amount of evil that we do so that we don't ruin everything. There's a kind of suffering that happens with that. And then there's secondly a kind of suffering that happens to make us grow stronger. Think of the flood, right? The flood at the beginning of the book of Genesis. That was to wipe out all those sons and daughters of Cain who were doing evil. Like, it was too great for God to be able to say he needed some people who were going to be not totally on the wrong path. So he, to protect Noah, he wipes out everybody else. And again, God is doing that sort of curating. So with us, he'll do that too. But when it comes to, sometimes he has to actually sort of say, no, I'm going to punish you and separate you from me forever in hell, because if you were to go to heaven, you would ruin heaven
for everybody else.
for everybody else. You don't want Hitler to be in heaven being Hitler. You want Hitler to, if he's ever made it to heaven, he'd have to be a saint to be there, right?
Yeah.
But then there's also the kind of discipline that a father does to his children to make them grow and mature. And that's what God does for us.
It takes a long time to learn to appreciate that one.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a while. But it is a mercy when God corrects us. All of a sudden, time is up. Father Daniel Maloney, author of Mercy, What Every Catholic Should Know. Thank you so much. I very, very much appreciate the hour.
Thanks for having me. It's very great to be here.
I hope we'll be able to do it again. Scott Wieman's next. We're going to talk about addiction, a perfect follow-up to an hour on mercy. We'll talk about addiction from a Catholic perspective right after this.